Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. If you would like to find us, you could also look on the website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the last five, the most recent ones, including this one, just as soon as we get off the air, are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to talk about achieving our full potential. Yes, and like we sometimes do, in fact, we often do, let's define what we think full potential is so that we all know what we're talking about and we're all on the same page and we're all thinking about full potential. So what is it? What does it mean to achieve your full potential? What do you do to do it? How do we know when we've got it? What does it mean? So what does it mean to achieve our full potential? You know, thank you for all of your participation. There's lots of people on. Thank you very much. Georgina says that full potential is the best you can do. Mm-hmm. You've done it. You've reached your pinnacle. The best you can do. Good point. That would be your full potential. Now, this is an interesting point. Sean says that not only is it the best you can do, but it's more than what you thought was the best you could do. It's pushing your limits, right? More than what you thought was the best you could do. This is what I think I am capable of. And then as we get into the process, as we start to think, as we start to research, as we start to talk to other people, as we start to solve whatever the issues are, I find that I'm much more capable than I thought I was. Mm-hmm. More than what you thought was the best you could do. I can stretch. I can learn. I can go forward to a successful outcome. I can reach my full potential in this particular case. Yes. Mm-hmm. Quite a few people, Madison and others, are saying that full potential is finding a way to succeed. Mm-hmm. Finding a way to make it work. Finding a way to reach your successful outcome. Mm-hmm. Finding a way to succeed. What good definitions. Thank you. And, you know, thank you for all of your participation. Welcome. I have quite a few that I'm going to say are defining full potential as overcoming obstacles. Mm-hmm. Overcoming whatever's standing in your way and preventing you from reaching your goal, from reaching the successful outcome. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of people are mentioning this. George and Helen and others are saying that full potential is when you ignore those who say you can't. Mm-hmm. Ignoring the naysayers, not accepting their negative opinion as fact. Mm-hmm. And, you know, quite a few people are using the word preconceived notion. And that is really true. And we've talked about preconceived notions in prior shows, but it sure is oftentimes the case. By the way, like your prior shows, last five on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows archived on the radio station, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. So, preconceived notion, ignoring those who say you can't. A preconceived notion is sometimes gifted to you by someone else who's feeling negative and said, oh, you can't do that. That's impossible. No one's ever done it before. Well, If you accept that, then possibly you won't be able to. But if you say, no, I have potential, and I'm going to reach it, and we are going to strive together as a group, and we will find a way. Mm-hmm. As Madison says, find a way to succeed. Mm-hmm. And you can reach more than what you thought was the best you could do. So ignoring those who say you can't, that's overcoming obstacles. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are calling it refusing to give up. Well, sometimes the first try doesn't work, does it? Because it seems sensible at the time. I've done that a lot, and we all have. You do something that seems practical and sensible and like it certainly would work. And then for some reason that you didn't think of in the beginning, you find out that it really doesn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So refusing to give up and saying, well, that didn't work. Now it did it. Let's try something else. Mm-hmm. And people usually were finding a new direction, which is kind of try something else, isn't it? Finding a new direction. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for all of your input. Thank you for being here. Pardon me. And then we have people say finding a new plan, finding a way to succeed. This is an interesting one that quite a few people are talking about, and it's a very good point that you can overcome your obstacles and reach your full potential if you reach out to the media. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this before, and of course, nowadays the media is not just traditional, a newspaper, a magazine, a television, or a traditional radio show. The media is all kinds of things. We're talking, people are saying, reaching out to social media and reaching out to regular media as kind of getting support, getting good press. I know it's not actually press anymore, but you know what I mean. Getting people to say, yeah, that's a really good idea. Let's get behind it, especially if what we are trying to achieve needs a public forum. Mm-hmm. A lot of times when I do some groups and some workshops and seminars, but especially when I do a mediation and negotiation, a lot of times what we need to do is we need to have something change. Oftentimes a law, because I happen to be a lawyer, but a lot of times groups work towards changing a law, a regulation. In this particular area, you need public support. You might not even, yes, good point. People are saying that a lot of times you need to get something on a ballot so that it can be voted on. And this is true, especially now. I know that I happen to be in the United States and this is a global show, but all over the world, you vote for things, and even if it is a non-binding vote, like a recommendation to your leaders, to the people who really make the laws and could change the regulation or could make a new requirement or reduce one. A lot of times, even if it's non-binding, the leaders will recognize that there is a tremendous amount of public support and go with it. Yeah. And so that's a very good point about the media, and to garner public support. And, yes, good point, garner signatures and garner like an email campaign. People are talking about actually making a campaign. If you don't need to get something on the ballot but you want to have your voice heard and you need to contact, well, people up there. In my case, it's in Washington, D.C., the federal government and like that. You could write, for example, the equivalent of your congressman. And if they got, well, pardon me, thousands and thousands of emails and letters, well, that would be an indication to them to move on, as they say, and to reach their full potential and to do the will of the people. Good point. Reach the media. Mm-hmm. And that's what people are saying, finding a way to create change. And that's a really good way to create change. And one that can be done all over in many areas, you know what I mean? It doesn't have to be local. It could be global to create some sort of change. And so you would contact the media and also use social media to connect with each other, right? Right, yeah. Social media is wonderful. Gathering public support. And yes, the idea is to reach out to influential people. Mm-hmm. Quite a few people are mentioning different kinds of influential people who they have affected with a, well, it used to be a letter writing campaign, but really with a social media campaign nowadays, because you send emails. Mm-hmm. And yes, you set up a website, good point. And it brings the issues to the forefront so that somebody does something about it. Mm-hmm. And that's a way to get influence. So now that we've decided what full potential is and what it looks like, really, you know, we're a very practical group, right? A very practical show. And we don't just talk about it in theory. We want to know how to achieve it. So how are we going to achieve it? How are we going to reach our own full potential and create change and create our goal and succeed in our outcome? So how are we going to achieve it? This is a good point. Lee says that you reach your own full potential by connecting with others. Very good. We can connecting in the sense that we just talked about, in media and social media and across all kinds of lines. And these are people that you wouldn't necessarily speak with, actually speak to. You would communicate online. And they might even be people who are influenced one time, right, to send an email, to send a letter, to, well, I see, yeah, that's a good point. You might have make a phone call, depending on what it is that you're doing. Mm-hmm. And to be, stand up and be counted, so to speak. People, thank you very much. People are saying also gathering a group together to actually physically protest. Now, we do that, and I'm very big on very peaceful protest, because then you don't have problems like you see in the world where people are injured. Mm-hmm. But I think it's very important to be able to gather a group. And, you know, I've been involved with groups that have gone down to the Capitol in the United States, at the Capitol building in D.C., in Washington, D.C., and they have been quite effective and protested and brought signs. And, you know, yes, thank you, that people are saying that's a wonderful way to attract media attention. Yes, it is. There's nothing like a bunch of people with a bunch of signs of like mind and a real focused request coming to make their point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't have to be vicious or anything. You can just stand there, but that's group power, because everyone recognizes that for each physical person who bothered to come, because after all, they had to come from someplace else, right? And it's a big deal to physically come, much bigger deal than writing a letter and email, right? And for everybody who's physically there, they represent thousands of people. You know what I mean? If you've got 500 people there, it represents a lot of voters, a lot of citizens, a lot of people who are interested. And the media will indeed pick that up. And they could go, we're really worldwide nowadays with CNN and like that. So, yeah, good point. That you can connect with others not just physically, but also not just in person, but also through coming to something and through social media. But I think Lee says that he was really talking about reaching your own full potential by actually connecting with the others in the group that you're actually talking to face-to-face, the lead group, so to speak, if it's a bigger organization, a bigger idea. And yes, that's very important, that you really make the group, that you really keep it together so that you can all achieve the full, you know, groups have full potential too, right? They have the potential to really effectuate change or to really learn or whatever it is that the group is trying to do, really succeed in their goal, or they have the potential to not. Yeah, we don't like to talk about failure on this show, and of course we never do. But it's possible for a group's potential to not be reached. Uh-huh. And in order to prevent that, you connect with the others, right? Yeah. You know, Hiroto's making a good point that there's not only power in numbers, but you need to make alliances with other groups. What a wonderful idea, and how effective that is. You are a not-so-big group that needs to have something changed, and you are people of like mind. For some reason, your group is from an organization or something, and you have a lot in common with each other, but you need to make alliances across to other groups with the same goal who might not have the same reason for wanting it or might be quite different. And that's always wonderful. Thank you. Power in numbers, so you need to make alliances. Mm-hmm. And, of course, use social media to make alliances. But there's nothing like personal. There's nothing like really reaching across a cultural boundary, some sort of a difference, and saying, hi, we are focused, you are focused. Come and let us be allies and let us work together. And we will pool our resources. Good point. People are talking about economic resources. Very good point. Sometimes groups, fail or kind of fade away, which is a type of failure, right? Because they couldn't gain enough support or they couldn't raise the needed funds, right? Yeah. And if you make alliances with other groups, you pool your resources. Mm-hmm. Yes, good point. You pool your information. And yes. Thank you for all of your participation. Helen and others are thank you all for being here. You pool your expertise. Mm-hmm. They know things their group has expertise that you don't have. And even if you're all experts in something, a bunch of heads are better than one, and a bunch of knowledge, and we all have ideas on what to do, and we'll combine. We'll make a bigger group, essentially speaking. A lot of times, alliances, though, do not actually make one big group. They stay separated by their common bond with each other as humans, like a cultural bond or religious or whatever, and work, workplace. And they stay as a group because they really like each other and they like being a group. But you get together for the purpose of reaching the common goal. So I don't know, does that make you one big group? Not kind of exactly. And if it's a lot of people, then representatives actually meet together and actually are the core communicators when you have an alliance. Whoever is, the chairperson, the leader, the president, probably us, yes, you either become the alliance, the representative, or you send someone who would be particularly amenable, or for some reason is geographically more amenable. Sometimes there's an actual practical reason. Mm-hmm. But yes, alliance is very good. Thank you for mentioning that. Mm-hmm. Jamie and others are saying that you achieve full potential when you achieve the desired outcome. Yeah, you've got it because it worked. Your desired goal, your desired outcome. Mm-hmm. Sarah and others are talking about satisfaction. How do we know when we've achieved our full potential? You have the satisfaction of having done the best possible job under the circumstances. Good point. Satisfaction of having done the best possible job under the circumstances. Under the circumstances is always the caveat, right? Best possible job. And, it's a good point. I'm getting quite a few people kind of not disagreeing, but saying that if you find the circumstances are against you, you should try to change the circumstances. Yes, you should try. Sometimes you need to modify the path in real life. You have to modify what a successful outcome looks like. When you get into the process and you find that the circumstances are not what you expected. Sometimes you can change them. Sometimes that's the first thing that needs to be done. And that's why you make alliances. Yeah. Sometimes you don't realize the depth of the problem until you get into it, the depth of the issues. Yeah. You know, Luke says that you're working at full potential when you're going in a step-by-step logical manner. Step-by-step logical manner. We've talked about actually reminding people of our progress. I'm very big on that because, you know, you start out with the issues and the process sometimes takes a little while. And it seems, at least towards the beginning, that, gee, we're meeting, we're taking our time. It's pleasant enough. I mean, it's convivial, right? But we're not getting anywhere. You know, it's just not going. We're just not working really towards the outcome. We're just kind of talking about it, right? And the answer is that we're making a step-by-step logical progression, and we've just forgotten how far away we were when we started. And so I think it's important for the leader to celebrate the victories and to remind everyone how far away we were when we started and how much closer we are now, and how each time we get together, each time we negotiate, we go further. We are working our way towards success. We're working our way down the path. And there's some preliminary stuff often that needs to be taken care of. But we're doing that too. And to show people that it's working is very important because, you know, we're all human. And, you know, people get discouraged if it doesn't seem like it's going forward. So, yeah, it's very important to not only work in a step-by-step logical manner, but to let people know that that's what we're doing so that they realize it and they go, oh, yeah, wow, I forgot how far apart we were and what we've learned, what we've researched, what we have gained, how we've made a connection with each other and with other people of influence who are important. You know what I mean? It's important. People are using the word timeline. Yes, if a timeline is a visual representation of how far we've come, and then each time you get to fill in more. You know how charities oftentimes, and I've done this with groups too, not that aren't particularly charities, but are going towards a goal, especially an economic one, which is easy to track. You know how you have one of those visual representations that's like a column, and then you fill it in ink to show how, and then they put the percentage down how far we've come. Yeah, that for money, it's easy to do that because you can track it. But even how far we've come in progress towards each other, not maybe with filling in a column, but with writing it down each time, what we've accomplished. What we accomplished, and leaving the board, whatever it is that you're using, the presentation up from time to time so that you can see, well, this is what we did the first time, the second time, what have we accomplished? It will also focus the group on really doing something and not just kind of stalling. I think it's a great idea. I use it all the time to actually keep us focused on going forward so that we can see it, so that we can know it, so that we can do it. Yeah. So the question is coming up, and you know that this is an organic show. It's not scripted. It goes according to what your questions are and what people are thinking. So, and as a practical matter, people are asking, how can we judge if we're at our full potential? How do we know that this really is the best of the best and that we've reached it? How do we know when we've got that? How can we judge it? You know, it's a really good question because sometimes it's hard to see and you're not sure if this is it or we can go further. Yeah. So how do we know if we've got full potential, if we're working on all, firing on all cylinders, whatever they say? Yes, how do we know if we're really working to our full potential and working towards a successful outcome, which is, well, yeah, it's on the horizon there. There we go. Julie and others are saying that you know it when the participants are working together as a team. Mm-hmm. It's a team effort. We are all working together. We are all focused. Mm-hmm. We're working together as a team. Mm-hmm. That's a good way to see that you've got your full potential. Mm-hmm. You know what? Quite a few people have interesting ideas about how, what's an indication that you are having, that you've reaching full potential, and that you're really working at the max, and that we're really going forward. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people use the word group dynamic. Mm-hmm. And when the group dynamic is positive, yeah, people asking what on earth group dynamic is, it's kind of, you know, it's one of those things that's hard to describe in words. It's when everybody's really working, and they're working as a team, and the whole thing is progressing. Mm-hmm. You know what? I'm going to call all of these things part of group dynamic, that it's nice of all of you to be here and to participate, and that you've sent, because these are all parts of group dynamic, and they make it positive. Because, you know, it goes both ways. You could have a negative group dynamic, and you got to change that real fast, or people will quit. So you need a positive group dynamic, and you need to have participants working together as a team. Good point. So what makes a group dynamic positive? What shows us that we're working to our full potential? Mm-hmm. A lot of people are using the word that people will volunteer. That's a real good positive group dynamic. People are willing to put in extra time, extra effort, extra enthusiasm, and report back to the group. Yeah. Or to volunteer to reach out, to volunteer to... Sometimes you want to do something like help at a food bank or something actually to go to. Mm-hmm. Volunteering is a real good positive group dynamic. People want to participate. They volunteer. Mm-hmm. People using the word focused, that people are really focused on the issues. They're serious. They come prepared. They want to keep pushing forward so that we can reach our successful conclusion. And, you know, all of these things are really, people use the word enthusiastic, enthusiasm. All of these items that make a positive group dynamic are indications of enthusiasm, mm-hmm. You have enthusiastic participants. You know, if we are enthusiastic, the whole group is enthusiastic. And remember, we need to be enthusiastic as the leader. Right. You know, sometimes you don't feel like it, right? And you've called the meeting, and it is, you did it, well, a week in advance because you had to give everybody notice. And for some reason, gosh, you really don't want to. But you're the leader. You've got to have enthusiasm because you model the group dynamic. You are the person who is the person that everybody's looking at. You're in charge. You keep it going. We've talked about this before, how to keep the group going and to keep enthusiasm. And, oh, yeah, people are saying enforce the rules of civility. Yep, that's true, too. And you've got to take 3 deep breaths and remember what a good and important thing it is, and that everyone's looking to you as a guide, as a leader, as a shining example of enthusiasm. Ah. And also, you know, this is a good point, too, and it's part of enthusiasm, but it's a level up. And it has to do with our preconceived notions, too. Rinaldo and others are saying that you have to be optimistic of success. Optimistic of success. You have to show that you believe that we're going to succeed. We're going to reach our goal. We're going to reach deep down, bring out our full potential, work together as a team. We're going to volunteer and be focused, and we are going to be optimistic of success. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if you are fairly certain that it's not going to work, you know what? It's not going to work. Yeah. Yes, thank you. People are going, that's self-fulfilling prophecy. Yes, we've talked about that in several of these shows too. Yeah, it is. If you go, well, you know, I'm hired to show up as the leader, and I'm going to physically show up along with the participants who are required for some sort of a reason to show up physically or to show up online. But wow, this is not going to work. Well, you've already ruined it. Yeah. You're not going to reach your full potential because you're just not going to bother to try. No, but you have to be optimistic it can be done, even if it's never been done before. You know, there's always a first time for everything. That's my motto. So, people are asking if we're going to achieve full potential as a group and as an individual and like that, how do we encourage the cooperation of the other participants? That's a really good practical question. How do we encourage other people to cooperate, to buy into this notion of optimism and reaching our full potential and succeeding in our goal? How do we get them to do it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do we get them to reach their full potential, to work towards it, if nothing else? Yeah. You know, this is a wonderful answer because it's really kind of the baseline for everything. Ellis says that you encourage cooperation in achieving full potential by asking for help. Yes, thank you. You ask. You say, you know what, we need to work together. And you give assignments. Good point. Yes, asking for help. Giving people a job, an assignment. Something and dividing up the group. Sometimes you divide the group. It depends how big, of course, the group is. Sometimes you need to divide into teams to work on something. Asking for help. Wonderful idea. Yes. Javier says that you encourage everyone to participate. Mm-hmm. You need to participate. You need to be a member of the group. You can't just, sit in the back there with your arms crossed and not say a word. Just because you're required to come here, you don't have to participate. No, everyone needs to participate. I actually specifically bring out the people who want to sit around the edges. I ask them their opinion. I ask them a question. I give them an assignment. Yeah, because we're all going to participate. We're all going to strive towards meeting our full potential and getting a successful outcome. Yeah, Laura and others are saying that takes teamwork. Mm-hmm. Now, your whole team is a funny word, right? Your whole group can be a team, mm-hmm, working towards something, even if the group is big. Some issues, some group, some reason that you're there, might be a workshop or seminar type thing, they don't really naturally divide into separate teams. So the whole thing is a team. We all work together. It can be a big group. It's fine. Yeah, it's a good point. The bigger the group, the more written participation there is, because everybody can't talk every time if you've got like 100 people. You know what I mean? It's too long. You can't really go around the room. I like to do it with a manageable-sized group, but there comes a point at which everyone can participate, but not necessarily verbally. Yeah. And I do like to divide into teams, even if it's the same issue, just so people have a way of talking to each other and not to the whole group because this way you interact in a smaller group. If I've got 100 people, even if we're all talking about the same issues, I will divide up into teams. How many teams, people are asking. I'm going to say the word that you always think that I say. People go, you always say this. But I am going to say it depends. It depends on whether or not you're going to divide into the room or you're going to get together outside of the group, right? It depends on the complexity of the issues. It depends what you're doing. If it's possible, depending on what it is that's the topic, and I do this when I'm doing workshops and seminars, really workshops, in a workplace, right, like compliance workshops and stuff, because these people will see each other again, and what they have in common is their workplace, yeah, or their type of work. I make teams, if it's a big group, then one representative from the team talks. They vote on a leader, so to speak, which is a way to get people to voice what they've decided. And then for the next day, the next set of issues, the next set of goals, I will rearrange the team so that people get to meet everybody and talk to everybody and deal with everybody. See, and you don't just get tight into your little group of, what, 10 people. Yeah. I really like to have the personal connection all the way around. Yeah, so I actually round robin the teams. Mm-hmm. Oh, people asking how I do it. I'm going to say it depends again. It depends if you've got different types of expertise that naturally make teams, or everybody's kind of equal. There's just an awful lot of them. You know, I've spoken in lecture halls and done workshops with really big groups. And if there's an awful lot of them and you just need to make teams but you'd like to shuffle the teams, I will actually have either a bowl of colored plastic discs, and when people come in, they pick a color, and then your color is your team designation. And I tell people to not pick the same color every day, right? So we can all mix it up and meet everybody. Yeah, it's the easiest way to do it. If you've got a check-in table, you can give people a color each day, a colored chip. Okay. You know, I use, like, they're not really poker chips, but those little plastic discs, different colors. And you need one for everybody and one for every kind of team. You know what I mean? So that you don't have odd numbers and spares and things. And you tell people to pick a different color than they had last time. Yeah. That's the easiest thing to do, to just do it by random. Because otherwise you've kind of pre-selected and don't want to. Yes, people are saying that numbers on a name tag. You know how you put the little number on and then you're team one or team two or something. This is okay if you're not going to switch team members because you've got it designated, right? Even if it's a one-day seminar. In the morning, because what? We have hours in the morning and then we have break for lunch. I do like to at least switch everybody up one time. When you come back from lunch, you get to pick yourself a different color. You turn in your old color, and you tell people that you're going to do this because otherwise they lose their disc. Yeah, it's kind of like, well, that wasn't a souvenir. You weren't supposed to lose it. So you turn in your old color for a new color at lunchtime. Yeah, it's real nice. At the end of the day, yes, I collect all of the, you're supposed to throw all your chips back in the bowl because, you know, if people go home with them or go to their hotel or whatever with them, they won't remember to bring the darn thing back. So, yes, and yes, I do have a bag of emergency spares. So, that's team building, that's team making. And, yes, very effective, and it's random. And then people are satisfied that it's random, too, which they don't feel that somehow they've gotten into the B team as opposed to the A team. Yeah. You know, you don't want people to feel kind of put out. There's important people over there, and I'm not in that one. Well, it's the luck of the color. You know, it's the luck of the draw. Yeah. Right, and others are saying that that makes a cooperative group dynamic. It does. And it makes everybody know everybody so that when we break for food, we've already met a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And sometimes with big groups, of course, it's not a potluck, but we have some sort of a snack break, and we have a lunch break, and maybe even a dinner break. So, you know, depending on how many days we're going and what we're doing. But, and yes, it makes everybody, they've already talked to each other. They already know something about each other. And when you make the new groups each time, of course you give a few minutes for everybody to introduce themselves, say something about themselves, you know, something relevant. And so we've already learned something. Mm-hmm. Yes, you all know that I'm big on name tags. People asking about name tags. I love them because it's hard to remember everybody's name. Yeah. See, everybody remembers your name, right? Because you're the leader. But it's hard to remember which one's which. At least it is for me. I guess I'm not all that spiffy with names. And yes, I know the games about we make the name go with the personal characteristic or their outfit or something. But I got to tell you, you're in a big group, a big venue, even a medium-sized one, you don't have time to make that connection. Because people are introducing themselves right and left. You know, you can't go, you know, Helen hair, yellow outfit. You know, it's just you can't make that. You can't do it. Yeah. So, yeah, so it does make a cooperative group dynamic. Thank you, Ryan. It really does. Huh? How do we encourage full potential? How do we make people do it, get them to cooperate? Alex says you clearly define what needs to be done. Real good point. Sometimes a group wants to do something that's kind of general, right? And we need to define it down. I don't know, help the world. Well, not that general. But we need to define it down so that we can have a clear-cut goal. So we know where on earth we're heading and we can focus on it. You can't focus on something just help the worldy. You have to focus on why and how and where. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Liam says that to focus on a goal, use a timeline to understand the process. Okay, I'll go with timeline there. Because a lot of people, I think including me, a lot of us are visual thinkers, and even if we're not, it doesn't hurt to actually put down what needs to be done and the progression, at least what we think the progression is going to be, that we need to do. Now, just writing the timeline down on a flip chart, big piece of paper or a whiteboard or blackboard or whatever it is you're doing, does not actually set it in stone. You know, people get confused. They go, well, we set a timeline and we're not making it. Well, the timeline is an idea. It's a focus tool. It's a goal setter. But as you go along, the timeline gets modified, right? Some things take more time. Some things take less time. And a lot of things are steps in between that you didn't figure on when you started. Yeah, that's what's known as progress. That's what's known as working together, reaching our full potential, and focusing on the goal. Yeah, timeline's great as long as you remember that there are many timelines. You keep looking at it and keep going, yeah, this is where we are. This is what needs to be done. Let's add this to it. Uh-huh. Yeah. You know, Ava and others are saying that the key to the focus is that you focus on the reasons for the goal, why we want it. You focus on the ultimate change. Yeah, why is always an important point. And it is very important to know the why we want it from our participants. Because sometimes, and we've talked about this, sometimes we have the same ultimate outcome that we'd like, the same goal, but we have different why. We have different reasons for wanting it. There's nothing wrong with that, and it's wonderful. We're all making alliances. We're all working towards the same goal. But we should define the why so that we all understand where everybody's coming from, is what it really is, what it is that we're doing. Yeah, it's very important. The why is important to know. And I like to know it right up front. Why are you here? That's where you coach it. Well, I suppose you could ask it just like that. It's not rude, as long as it's not rude. And you ask it of everybody. But the why is interesting and important, and it leads to your group dynamic. What an idea. Yeah, the why. Yeah, and Misaki and others are saying that you focus on the people and their needs so that you can gain understanding. Focus on the people in the group and their needs so we can gain understanding. Good point. And you know, that is indeed the recipe for peace now. Well, I suppose we'll call it our recipe, right? That we try to make a convivial atmosphere. We try to get to know our fellow group member. And that's the way to overcome, well, obstacles caused really just by diversity. Because we're all different and we're all interesting. And we'd all like to know each other. I often say this. People think that you need to be really friends because of the networking and the convivial and the food and the sharing and like that. The answer is you don't have to be friends. This is not a date. It is a way to get together with each other for this specific issue. At this specific time, for this specific need, and get it done. Right? That's really the ultimate goal. We want to be able to succeed. We want to be able to get something accomplished that we all agree is important. That's it. And But you don't have to be really friends outside of the group or even inside the group. But you know what? What you really are is you are now acquaintances. And the next time the group needs to get together, the next time something needs to be solved, you already know who to call, who would be the right person to talk to. So in that respect, you're going to call each other. People are calling different names for this. Yeah, I personally think the colleagues is a good name, right? People are saying you're colleagues. You know, it's a good point. You are colleagues. You've solved something together. You've been in a team with each other. You don't have to have dinner on a regular basis. But when something else needs to get done, you're already colleagues. Yeah, you already have a relationship, and you already know that you can work together. Yeah, that's it. Work together to get something done. Okay. Yes, I am. People are saying, are you getting to the recipe part? Yes, I am. We have, of course, had a very interesting discussion. Thank you for all of your participation, and we've gone over time. Because that sometimes happens, because really discussion is more important than the recipe. We'll get to the second one next time. I think we have time for one short one, and then next time I will do the other and we will catch up, because otherwise we're going to run over time, and, well, we're busy people. We have other things to do. Yes, no, just kidding. But we only have so much time allotted for the show. So before I talk about food, I'm going to say what I always say, because it's so important. You want to hear me say it many, many times, you can hear prior shows. blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow is where they all are. And the last five are carved on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Yeah. I have a well, we'll do the first things first. Hello. And when you're going to have people bring food, or you're going to have food, it is very, very, very important to actually communicate with everyone as to whether they have a food allergy, a food prohibition, or a religious prohibition to some sort of food. Very important. We're making a convivial atmosphere. The reason being that we want to keep people in the room and talking to each other on a non-formal, informal basis, right? Yeah. But you don't want anybody to get sick or hurt or offended. So you must know if something cannot be eaten by someone, and you must communicate this to everybody so that we don't accidentally bring something that can't eat. And also, if you're going to bring food, and you are, you need to have everyone bring a list of what is in it. Not just a label of what it is, meatloaf, but what is actually in it so that I can judge whether or not I can eat it. And please, please, please don't sneak stuff into meat like shrimp paste and things. I've seen that done. It is just appalling. Don't do it. It doesn't add that much flavor. Take my word for it. So we're going to take a survey about food prohibitions, and then we're going to label everything with a list of what is in it. Now, the food is not because we're hungry, right? It's a tool to get us to talk to each other and to make a pleasant time out. Things are getting kind of heated, right? But it is also, I think, as the leader, that we should have some extras because it's also a convivial good time. And it's not cool when you run out of food at the party. So, it's my little fetish. I know I always bring extra, even though I'm the leader, I bring extra. I also think we should have at least one safe dish, something everybody can eat and is familiar with. And you can also bring an adventure dish, something that no one has an allergy to, because you've taken the survey, right? But it's a little more adventurous, and it might have a list of ingredients that not everyone in your area would be familiar with. They might not have eaten it before. So it's an adventure dish. Now, usually when we do the we've run out of time, let's only do one recipe problem, I usually do the safe one. But this time I'm going to do the adventure one, primarily because it's shorter. No, because it's fun to hear that too. So the adventure recipe this time is going to be a yogurt chicken. This means that it, of course, has dairy, and it has some nuts in it and other things that make it adventurous. It's not quite as safe. Has to be carefully labeled. And it might even have something that someone has not eaten before. And therefore, it's an adventure. They got to think about it, whether they should. So, it's going to be a yogurt chicken. It's very delicious. Somebody sent this in tonight. We made it, and it's just wonderful. Thank you. We're going to have 1.5 pounds, maybe 2 pounds, of boneless, skinless chicken breasts. It's easy for me to find around here. It just comes in a package. If that's hard for you to find, just cut up a chicken, skin it, bone it, cut it into cubes. We're going to make cubes out of it. We're going to cut them into nice chunks. A nice big onion, finely chopped. 4 tablespoons of oil. Let's have some ground nuts. Anybody allergic to nuts, you can leave it out. Do not use peanuts just in case. I like about 1/2 cup of, maybe a little less, of cashews if you can. It's a little bit expensive, but they are delicious. Almonds are also very nice. Something sweet is the answer because it don't want to overpower. A nice big stick of cinnamon, which we're going to remember to take out. 4 cloves, which is a little bit unusual. You fish them out too. Let's have a red pepper that we're going to de-seed and vein and dice. 2 cloves of garlic crushed. You think I use too much garlic? Take some out. People say I use a lot of garlic. I think I do. Let's have a little bit of fresh ginger that we're going to grate, like, you know how it comes just in a big piece? Like, grate up like 1/4 inch of it. And let's have about 12 ounces, nice container, of yogurt. Yes, do not use the light kind, or for God's sakes, don't use flavored. Just the regular kind. Personally, in the United States, there is a type of yogurt called Greek. It is thicker, and I love it. I think it's wonderful, A, to eat, but B, to cook with. The thickest yogurt you can find, if you can't find something called Greek, and you don't just have it in your stores, use whatever is the natural thickest yogurt and pour off any of the, what is that called, whey, the water that comes to the top of it. Mm-hmm. Don't mush it in. Just get rid of it because you want it to be thick. So we've cubed the chicken. Now we're going to saute the onion in the oil until it gets, it smells nice, gets softish, lightly brown. And we're going to throw in everything else except the yogurt. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, everything else but not the chicken. I was thinking about that for a second. We put the chicken aside, right? Right. So keep the chicken aside, and you put in all the ingredients except the yogurt, which we're going to add later. We're now going to stir-fry the whole thing. Yeah. And it takes not very long. What is it, a couple of minutes? It's just to get everything incorporated and basically cooked through and heated through, right? Now, to the same pan, we're going to add the yogurt. And if it's kind of thick, we could add a little bit of cold water. Mm-hmm. You have to look at it and see if what you've got is sauce or what you've got is really thick. I don't add much water, I got to tell you. And I do it very sparingly. Could you use chicken broth? Well, don't see why not. And we're going to add just enough liquid so that we can bring it to a boil so that we can heat it through. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to add a little bit more water because it can't be too thick. A little bit more water to it. It's nice. It's a sauce. Mm-hmm. It depends how thick your yogurt is, right? We're going to simmer it so that it's nice and hot and simmery and like that. Now we're going to add the chicken. We're going to bring it up to the heat so that it's almost boiling. We're going to reduce the heat. And we're going to cover the thing and simmer it, because we're cooking the chicken, right? The chicken isn't cooked, until the chicken's cooked through and it's nice and tender. This depends on the thickness of your chicken, maybe about 20 minutes, 25 minutes. Got to kind of look at it. The smaller, of course, you cut your pieces, the faster it'll cook. Yeah. I make fairly not so big chunks, because I want it to cook through and not stick to the bottom. And I don't want to add much water to it. I want it to be nice and thick and yummy. And remember to take out the cinnamon stick and fish out the cloves so that nobody gets it in their plate. Delicious. You get a whole bunch of rice to the side so that people can take it. And smells wonderful. You can simmer it in the room if you have the facilities. Makes everybody's mouth water. Is very delicious. It is the adventure recipe because of the different kinds of spices. Might be unusual to people. And I guess because of the yogurt, yeah. Some people don't tolerate yogurt well. Yeah. So that's our adventure recipe. We are nearly out of time. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all the wonderful ideas. Thank you for listening. Please do come again. Thank you for your participation. If you would like to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is recipeforpeacenow.com. The five most recent shows are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows are archived on the radio station, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for coming. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.